Mike Pence makes an announcement about an announcement, we'll explain. The effort to avoid a BMV lawsuit, a needle exchange extended, and Joe Hogsett calls for higher ethics standards. That, plus David Letterman, 500 picks and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 22, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Mike Pence revealed his political plans for 2016. He will run for re-election. But the governor made that known in unusual fashion, letting someone else deliver the news. The state GOP chairman, Jeff Cardwell, sent out a memo revealing that the formal announcement will come at the state GOP dinner in June. It costs $150 to attend. Will that information help or hurt ticket sales? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, why is Mike Pence pursuing this announcement strategy?
I mean, it's not a surprise. He has no other alternative. I mean, he only ran for governor in the first place to try to be vice president or president. He's obviously with the RFRA. That's out of the question. So it seems to me it's either run for re-election or get to the unemployment line, and I think he probably thinks running for re-election is preferable.
But this is unusual, isn't it, having someone else make it clear? It wasn't. He might make an announcement.
Well, they're trying to, you know, obviously trying to drive sales, as any state chairman will do. I'm not sure that this is a strategy designed to do that, however. Maybe they could say $150 for a ticket and $250 if you give a donation and don't have to come. That might be a better fundraiser for them.
So you can get a $250 ticket. Will this help ticket sales?
I don't think they have a problem with ticket sales. They never have. This is a situation where Mike Pence said he was going to announce after the session was over. And that's what he's doing. And it's smart to do it at a night when you're going to have the party faithful there. And also Governor Haslam from Tennessee is the main speaker that night. He also happens to be the head of the RGA. Which is not a bad thing to have
Republican
the
Governors
RGA
Association
while you're doing it.
They pass out a little campaign
money. They spend some money on campaigns, too. So it's a good thing to do. And I see nothing wrong with this. It's not much different than anybody wanting to announce in front of their faithful. I mean, John Gregg did it over YouTube the night before the Democrat state dinner, which was a little unorthodox. I think we talked about the fact
that
it was.
We did.
So, yeah, no, I think he's got a... He'll be off to a good start with that crowd, and they'll have a nice crowd on June, I think it's the 20th, buy your ticket.
All right, but we've talked about how his approval rating's down. He's clearly got some problems, even with the Republican faithful. Does this strategy suggest weakness?
Well, it's not. Doesn't suggest strength. Let's put it that way. In a way, I would suppose you don't want to make a big deal and have the balloon drop right now, because then that suggests that there was a doubt whether you would seek re-election, that maybe this is the consolation prize. In other words, even though he had left open the suggestion of a possible White House bid, we all have agreed that that went out the window with the explosion of the controversy over RFRA. So to suggest now that I'm going to make a big deal about running for governor at this point suggests, well, the door did slam shut, and so now this is my second choice, my consolation prize. So the suggestion I take away is, and you see this in what the announcement said the other day, his focus has always been on Indiana. His priority has always been on Indiana.
He said that during the whole time he was talking about this.
But I guess what I'm saying is the suggestion that this is not a consolation prize. I've had my focus on Indiana, and it remains on Indiana.
Well, so why doesn't he do anything
but
as governor then?
The suggestion to me is he needs to find a friendly audience in order to do this in front of, and he also needs to get a foot in the door to keep other Republicans from stepping up.
Well, then you don't need me, because that was exactly my answer, Jim. So I guess I'll just pass. There is a month between now and June 20th. That's a lot of time, and there's no secret that there are people in the party who are thinking about or are looking for people to possibly take that on. It's a Herculean task when you're talking about an incumbent governor, but that's the situation. So that's exactly what this does. This says, I am going to run for governor, and it will be official on this date. And the hope, I think, is to let everybody know that's the case and to maybe dissuade some others from thinking about that.
All right. What's the most recent read? Does he get a primary opponent?
I don't think so. I really don't. I've never thought there'd be a primary opponent. I think he'll talk about the accomplishments that they've had, and they've had a bunch of them, everything from education, more money than's ever been spent on education in the history of Indiana. Taxes are in good shape. They've cut taxes. We have the best fiscal situation in America. Chief Executive Magazine this week says Indiana is the number one business climate in the Midwest, sixth in the nation, the only one in the Midwest in the top 10. I mean, there's a lot of good things.
I wonder what the deadline was for that.
They can point to a lot of good things there, and they can talk about those now and throughout the whole campaign.
Yeah, and he can also talk about the damage he's done to the state reputation with RFRA. He's talked about how he's undermined public education. He can talk about the deterioration in wages
for
people here.
More on public education never before.
Yeah, and it all is going out in vouchers and other places, Mike. It's not going to public education.
True. It's exactly his challenge, though, because we saw this week he had a sit-down with the editorial board of the Indianapolis Star. And the column that resulted from the editorial page editor there was accomplishment, 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 then a giant but. And it talked about how the governor still defended the RFRA argument. And the one that had cost him so much on the Stephanopoulos interview
he won't commit to statewide civil rights protections for
That's exactly the challenge. That's exactly the challenge that the governor has.
To your question, Jim, about a possible opponent in the primary, the chances, I think, that he will face intra-party opposition diminish with the passage of every day and every week, because if you wanted to capitalize on the anger or the frustration or the clamor over RFRA, you would have done it by now or signaled your intention to run by now. And also, again, it's like anything else in life. You know, you're fired up and then you kind of lose interest. Yeah. So whatever candidate may have had that fire in the belly may not have
an opinion of him. They didn't have a strong opinion of him before.
Not enough for somebody necessarily to
talk about. On to some of the problems he faces. Lawyers for the BMV asked a Marion County judge this week to throw out a lawsuit that seeks repayment of overcharges that go back to 2002. Attorney Irwin Levin is seeking a trial on a class action suit that accuses the BMV of both overcharging fees and failing to pay timely refunds. A recent independent study of BMV procedures found the overcharges could total $60 million. In 2013, the BMV put steps in motion to identify and refund overcharges, and its attorney, Carl Hayes, argued against paying fees to Levin and tens of millions of dollars in interest.
We made some what we consider to be compelling legal arguments, and we're anxious for the court to rule.
The problem is that they're not going to pay all the money that's overcharged. They're going to pick and choose, just like they've done thus far, who they're going to pay and how much they're going to pay, and they're not going to pay any interest.
And that's Irwin Levin, Mike McDaniel. Can the Pence administration make this lawsuit go away?
Yeah, I think they can. What they're trying to do is make sure that you don't have legally deficient claims that are paid out. They are paying. Let's start with the fact that they are paying the overcharges. Okay? They have been. They continue to pay the overcharges. They decided not to pay the undercharges, which are more than the overcharges. That seems to get lost in this argument.
But they also don't want to pay interest.
Well, they don't want to pay interest on this stuff if they don't have to. I mean, that's basically takes away from their other taxpayers who pay the bill on this thing, which is why you have the Tort Claim Act in the first place. You don't want to have legally deficient claims that are paid out because of this. Now, if a person goes to the BMB with their claim directly, they get made whole. If they do it through the lawsuit, they're basically paying a surcharge to the attorneys. That's basically what happens here. And so that's one of the reasons that you're doing what you're doing. And you can go and look at the audit that's been done on this department that they called for. And it's on their website. The whole thing's there. They're even showing you all the stuff that they're doing to make the changes that are made. And this is a problem that's been going on for administration after administration. Democrats, Republicans, this is something they inherited.
Right.
They're fixing it. And it's going to take time for them to do that. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, they've had 12 years to fix it, okay, or 11 years to fix it. I mean, this is ridiculous. The idea that they're even contesting this is ridiculous. When Mitch Daniels came in here, he said he was going to run the BMV like business.
Well,
And they have. It's like Enron and Countrywide is what it's like.
What you've got here is the front office is working well. It's
absolutely.
The back office that's the problem, and that's what Mike Pence keeps saying.
Their fourth general counsel and their third commissioner in 18 months. It's the gang that couldn't shoot straight. At the same time they're doing that audit, they're in the other room changing the fees to make it look better. This is the third fix they have, and they haven't fixed it.
So
it needs to be done. It needs to be done
plus.
In open court where we can find out who is being.
So we can make some more money.
Who is being fleeced?
BMV first asked for a new judge. They got a new judge. They went to mediation. They couldn't come to an agreement in mediation, and now they're trying to have the lawsuit thrown out. They don't want some things to come out in open court.
Clearly.
Is the suggestion.
Well, I think that's a fair inference to draw, but the other thing I think that's important to remember here is that a lot of this wouldn't have happened were it not for Irwin Levin and his lawsuit.
Right.
All right? The fact that we're talking about this, the fact that that audit happened only came after the lawsuit was filed and the arguments were made. And so I agree with Ann in this. You need to bring this out into the open, and you need to make sure that all of this is clear. And I understand not wanting to collect the undercharges because you're going to make a lot of people awful upset. But at the same time, that doesn't mean you shouldn't collect interest.
Well, $30 million.
Or shouldn't pay interest as well.
The lawyer got $6.3 million of it.
Well,
yeah,
that's
you know
the way
what?
It
and
works.
And he deserved it for,
really?
For bringing this out. Okay. You guys,
that's what this is all about.
If the administration had taken care of business, Mike,
it wouldn't have been a lawsuit.
Going back to the Democrats.
It doesn't matter which one it was.
They're fixing it now.
Well, they only are fixing it because they got sued. And that's the only reason why. So they need to get that figured out, and then the legislature needs to streamline the fee structure.
Well, no question about
Judge,
that.
Judge, does this go to trial?
I think it probably does. You can't fault the attorneys for the BMV. This is the strategy, I suppose, that makes the most sense if your goal is to protect your client and get this tossed out of court. The problem is this isn't just any client. This is happening in the public arena under the spotlight of news organizations, and people talk about it because it's an agency that every Hoosier has some interaction with more than almost any other state agency.
Even the Amish have to get an ID.
Even though they don't have to put a photograph on it. So I mean, this is the kind of thing that the perception problem, even if it's the right legal strategy, to stand there and say, we want tossed out on jurisdictional or technical grounds that you weren't actually harmed, that you don't have standing.
Right. It's reprehensible.
When you question standing, I get it from a legal standpoint, but it from a perception standpoint, it doesn't help the cause.
It is
moving
reprehensible.
On. The state health commissioner has extended the needle exchange in Scott County for 1 year, and Congress is now looking into the HIV crisis there. State Health Commissioner Jerome Adams appeared before a congressional subcommittee this week. He said there is a need for more drug education for everyone from school students to the people who prescribe painkillers. The subcommittee includes two Indiana members of Congress, Susan Brooks and Larry Bouchon. Adams told them the story of a young man in Scott County to make his case.
He said, I had an injury as a freshman in high school, knee injury playing football. The doc prescribed me Vicodin. I kind of liked how it made me feel, so I took all the Vicodin he gave me. Took some more, ran out. He said it was easy to get in the community, got more Vicodin. Finally, that wasn't doing the job. Switched to OxyContin until that wasn't doing the job. Then I started injecting. And then he switched over to heroin, and now he's a 23-year-old HIV addict.
John Ketzenberger, will we see more needle exchanges in Indiana?
Yeah, I think you will. With the structure that was established by the General Assembly, I think you'll start to see some efforts in some of the areas where we have high counts, where we didn't. Scott County had a dramatic increase, but there are some other areas of the state that are dealing with this, and I think you'll see some move toward additional needle exchanges.
This is an interesting development because the law was just passed that allows local needle exchanges to be created, and the Pence administration fought it initially, and yet they've been doing this on a 30-day basis, and they went ahead with a one-year exchange. I think that's an interesting sign.
Well, I think there was a recognition of just how serious this problem was. It's not something you can pretend will go away if you just, everybody,
Well, 160 cases in an area where there were three in the previous 4 years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's clearly a problem there. And I think everybody recognized, forget about perception, forget about the suggestion that this somehow encourages or condones drug use. When you have a health problem of that scope and that severity, you really don't have much choice but to do whatever it takes to eradicate the problem or control the spread and help the people who are battling this.
The Pence administration seems to be coming to grips with this.
Well, they have. I mean, he signed the bill into law. It's something that was needed. We talked about this when we first talked about it on the show. This is the kind of thing that you've got to get in front of. You can't be chasing all the time. And to answer your question, will there be more? Yes, there will be more, because that particular area right now, they're worried about the surrounding counties and about how that might happen. As we talked about before, the Louisville Council decided that they're going to be in a full protection mode because they think this is working its way south. This is not the end of this, and so it's smart to get ahead of it. The legislature was responsive, and the governor signed it, and the health commissioner dealt with it.
It's the right thing to do.
It's not enough. It should have been done as a statewide program. We should have had some leadership from the governor's office months ago on this, where you could have catchment areas of multiple counties. The only reason the 1 year was extended was because it now is in the New York Times and it's now on national NPR about the crisis in Indiana.
Hearings on Capitol Hill.
So he put his Tea Party credentials aside and let it go forward. Wow. But the problem with this is you're taking it from the health commissioner initially to make an assessment of where other areas in the state are needed, and you're putting it on locals who don't have the training or the resources to know. To make a request to the state, and then the state says yes. But you've got to get the locals who don't have the training to make the request, whereas the state health commissioner and the governor should have stepped forward. It's just like DCS and BMV. He doesn't lead.
You talk about the national coverage, and I think there was a heightened sensitivity to the perception, the fear at least of the perception that Indiana is going to appear to be stuck in the 1950s, not only on the heels of the RFRA dispute, but now in the medical arena, that, you know, what's going on in Indiana that everybody just thinks
that appears. What do you mean, appears?
Let's move on. Joe Hogsett is promising to establish higher ethics standards if he wins the race for mayor of Indianapolis. The Democratic candidate called for, among other things, greater transparency in city contracts in a news conference outside the city-county building. He pointed out, as federal prosecutor, he brought charges against two members of the city-county council, Republican Lincoln Plowman and Democrat Paul Bateman. Both of them were convicted on corruption charges. He also proposed a two-year term limit for mayor, eliminating the HUD-NUT Forever law that currently permits unlimited terms.
It often leads to kicking hard, tough issues down the road. And I think a two-term limit would impose on the chief executive a much-needed encouragement to get the job of the people done in a short period of time.
John Schwanes, will that stand win votes for Hogsett?
In the end, I don't think it's as potent an issue as, say, crime, jobs, and infrastructure deterioration. But it's a strong suit for him. I mean, when you've been the U.S. attorney and you have a record of having...
But I'm talking about the term limits. Do people care about term limits?
No.
No, and actually, I thought you were referring more broadly to the notion of cleaning up corruption within government.
I mean, that's going to be the foundation of his campaign, certainly, which is why I was interested that he threw in this term limit argument.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a bonus, if you will, that didn't make a lot of sense in the context of the rest of the argument. Look, he's clearly pointing at Mayor HUD-NUT because he was mayor for four terms. No other mayor in the city has ever had more than two terms. And I think that, when you mess with a legacy that's as popular as Mayor HUD-NUT's, you probably ought to just leave it alone. Because that's the inference here.
Because he want to remind me, he beat Hudnut in a race for Secretary of State. Is he trying to remind
people? Well, if he's trying to be that subtle about it, Jim, then he's got another thing coming.
Hoosiers seem to have a pretty good handle on when they want to turn people out of office and when they like what they have. And some mayors, as we've seen in recent municipal primaries, are going on, five terms?
That's right.
And people like that.
This would put Indianapolis back in the position it was in before, where every other city in Indiana can have unlimited terms and Indianapolis can't.
Yeah. I mean, I think the more important part of that press conference is the transparency, and I don't think anybody can argue with that. I assume his opponent,
Chuck Brewer.
Oh, okay. Will endorse it because it's obviously what voters would like to see.
She's saying Chuck Brewer has a name ID problem.
Oops. She's saying, I think what she
answered that.
Answered that.
I can't imagine.
I thought you were saying the campaign's so transparent it's invisible, right?
Your take on Hogshead.
Well, I think the transparency as far as lobbying the city county council needs to be tightened up here. I've never have understood the way it works here. I think there needs to be something done that would tighten it up, similar to what's done at the state level. Two-term limits, I didn't understand his logic. To me, it's easier to kick something down the road if you know you're only going to be there two terms and you're going to get out of Dodge.
Make it somebody else's problem.
Longer. The longer you're there, the more you have to deal with it.
Yep.
So I wasn't quite sure of that logic. I'm sure that's going to be an interesting debate in the legislature. But on the whole, I didn't have
a Republican legislature would give him that.
They might give him that one just because they don't want to see him there. So they think you're going to be there for a while. They don't want to see him there for a while.
Right.
Well, and the conventional wisdom is that term limits tend to empower lobbyists and people who don't have to leave. They're going to be around and become the power brokers.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should mayor be subject to a two-term limit? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, make it three terms. Last week's question, should honest to goodness be scrapped as an Indiana tourism phrase? 74% said lickety split, 11% said say it ain't so, 15% said let me wander and ponder. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. An Indiana legend entered retirement this week with some help from the biggest names in American politics.
Our long national nightmare is over.
Our long national nightmare is over.
Our long national nightmare is over.
Our long national nightmare is over. Letterman is retiring.
You're just kidding, right?
Four U.S. presidents helped David Letterman end his 33 years in late-night television. His final show was this week. Here's part of his goodbye.
The people who watch this show, there's nothing I can do to ever repay you. Thank you for everything. You've given me everything. And thank you again.
Mike McDaniel, what's David Letterman's legacy?
I think he changed late-night television forever. And clearly, as the whole time he was on television, he always talked about his Hoosier roots and how much he supported Indiana teams like the Colts and the Pacers and Ball State and you name it. So he was an ambassador for the state of Indiana for a good part of those times. But I think he changed late-night television forever the way he did all the wacky bits that he did, like stupid pet tricks, probably was the beginning of what started out to generate more YouTube events like that than anything going.
Yeah.
And so he had a lasting effect on late night television. I think it's been for the good.
Did a lot of political commentary for a comedian.
He did, and really set the stage for subsequent comedians who did political commentary. But I think the most important thing is that he never forgot his roots. I mean, he has always maintained his loyalty to the state and always drawn on his experiences growing up here. And that Mike's right. He's been a great ambassador.
And he'll be at the Indianapolis 500 this weekend. And it's time now for our annual tradition, the Indiana Week in Review Indy 500 picks. Who will win the race, Ann Delaney?
I'm going to go with Scott Dixon.
Poll sitter.
I thought about Jeff Jordan, but I've decided to go for Juan Pablo Montoya.
That's just because you like to say the name.
Say it again.
Juan Pablo Montoya.
John. Oh, how about Tony Kanaan?
Tony Kanaan, that would be popular.
Elio Castro Neves.
Penske driver. He can't go wrong betting on Penske. That's why I'm picking Will Power.
But nobody picked Letterman's guy.
Rahal.
That seems disloyal, Jim.
Sorry. So we've had three tremendous crashes this week. Are you concerned about safety in IndyCar racing?
Absolutely.
Always. Yeah. Always.
Do they need to do something?
I think they're worried about it. I hope they got through Carburation Day without an incident, but people are going to really be on pins and needles come race day.
I think it's important to realize, though, that those, as horrific as all those crashes were, and when there was a serious injury, the others weren't injured, but when there was a serious injury with James Hinchcliffe, he was expertly removed and expertly saved at Methodist Hospital.
Well, there's no safer track.
There is no safer track.
And that continues to be. I mean, they've been on the front edge of whether it's safer barriers or retention devices for errant wheels and so forth. This is cutting edge. Always has been.
Speeds are going up. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.